choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game, better educated about your money, so you can live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Oh, I hope you're fired up because I sure am. My name is Stephen Briggs. I am the owner of Briggs Financial. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 50. What's an investor to do? Season 2 begins today of the Money is Personal podcast. We have made it a year, a whole year together, and I'm fired up. I new theme song. It's kind of nice. It's like you get used to the house, and you're like, boy, you're excited for where you live and what you do, but you need a new coat of paint occasionally. And hearing a rock ballad, you know, opener, that's a goodie. I can't lie about that. So good to have you here. Thank you so much for checking out the podcast. If you're a first timer, of course, you can find all 49 other episodes on the Briggs Financial website at BriggsWealth.com. You can also find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Google Play, Player FM. Subscribe to us for free on iTunes. It's fantastic. I want you to be here and write reviews, share this with friends. And I my big goal here is to bring you lots of good information that you can use that hopefully will empower you. That's the big thing. It's whether anyone ever becomes a client of mine or not. And I hope the whole world eventually becomes clients of mine. But realistically, if you're never a client of mine, but at least listening to this show consistently makes you feel good about the decisions you're making, gets you to think maybe a little bit differently about the financial decisions you've made, and you end up making better decisions as a result, I'm satisfied. I'm completely satisfied. I think sometimes we get too caught in the business sense of, boy, you know, but does that bring in money? It's like, you know what it does bring in is it improves the world in which we're going to be living in, not just now, but the world we need to be able to live in 30 years from now. And if you're making smart choices now and listening to this and you consistently make great choices, you're going to live a better life. But everyone around you will tend to benefit as well. So I believe in that. So let's talk about you. Let's talk about what's an investor to do. So we've, you know, the last several weeks, months, we've had a lot of stuff hit the newswire. I mean, you think about this for just a minute. There's political turbulence between the impeachment inquiry. You got Brexit, a U.S.-China trade deal issue, USMCA, several countries in the EU that still aren't financially in a great space. What's happening in the Middle East? What's happening, variety of situations. Hong Kong, Japan, South Korea trade tensions, North Korea tensions, slowing growth potentially globally, as well as murmurations about things affecting us domestically. Although, to be fair, I would say the economic data doesn't bear that conclusion outright by any stretch. But that doesn't stop people from using things such as the R word. And that R word is recession or pullback. And the thing is, for many people, when they hear the word recession, they think of a couple of things. They think about what happened in 08 and 09 and that era and the slow growth that and climb to get out of that situation. And they also think about maybe going back to the dot-com bubble that we had in the early 2000s, 99, 2000, in that range. And so the problem with these being kind of banners of what a recession is that historically that is not what a recession is. What you had there are some two pretty damning market events that occurred. But historically, what a recession normally actually involves is more of a market pullback and a corner, a kind of a reevaluation, a massive rebalancing of sorts of what things are valued at, and both in terms of the economy domestically as well as abroad, and much more globalized now than 15 or 20 years ago, where I think more of these events would be more isolated. I think we're becoming more and more interdependent and interconnected, and as a result, these events, they're still primarily localized, but not entirely insulated. So you hear all of this, and it can feel scary. You're wondering, if I invest money now, am I going to lose it? I mean, is that what I'm basically just setting myself up for? If I have money and it's grown, should I be protecting it? and so these are very rational thoughts to have, but they lead to some very they tend to lead to some fairly irrational behavior and some irrational thinking. And so what I want to do is bring up a few points for you that'll at least help, hopefully serve as a help and a guide for how to think about what is happening, what may happen, I'll go into that in a minute, and what exactly to do about it. So the first thing I'm going to point out it right off the bat is that as good of an investment manager or financial planner or whatever I may be, my crystal ball works just as well as yours. Sits in a corner, gathers dust, might be shiny to polish, and you're like, yeah, but you actually have a crystal ball? I'm like, no, I don't. Don't have a bowling ball either, and that would probably work just as well or better than anything I would have. But no, if I had a crystal ball, it would work no better than yours. And the thing is, there have been experts that have been crowing about there being a recession, the market's overvalued, etc., for 4 years now. And they've been dead wrong. And if you had listened to it and said, well, I'm just not going to participate until there's a major pullback on the market, you've missed out on 50% growth. And meanwhile, the market's not trading significantly higher than it's traded over the last 30 years, 50 years. It hasn't overheated, which is typically you see this exuberance right before a major pullback. We haven't had that. The closest we got to that was at the end of 2017 and the beginning of 2018, and the market was trading at about a 19.2 to 19.8 times earnings. And that was a bit heated, and then it corrected. February and March were, we saw some pretty big pullbacks to the negative side, and then it recovered and we moved on. Earnings grew into the valuations, And by end of year, we were, sitting here trading at 14 and a half, 15 times earnings, going, what happened? pulled back the market was, where was all the bad news? And the answer is that there wasn't really. So the thing is, trying to predict what will happen in any particular quarter or any particular year, I think it's a bit of a fool's errand, because there's just so many factors that can play into how decisions are made out there that, frankly, you can't control, I can't control. So I think what that does is when I look at managing assets and when I get thinking about how do you play that game, I think much more long term, and I think much more strategically about the viability and success of a company in a variety of economic conditions, in terms of its products and sales, in terms of how it's being managed, in terms of its business structure, and that's what I do a lot of homework on, and trying to find companies that have the best chance of surviving, not just surviving, but actually doing well in a variety of different we'll call it weather conditions. I'm not just looking for a stock that does great in exactly perfect sunshine with exactly perfect soil with exactly, no, I think that, there are strategies that do that. But I think that there's some inefficiency in that as well. So these are things to at least kind of think about, is that our crystal balls, I mean, like I said, they work equally well. That is to say, not at all. So, trying to get too caught up in any one particular event. The other mistake I see is people getting too caught up in any one political event. For example, this past Friday, the White House said that it was going to work to curb U.S. investments into China. And there was rumors and milling about, does that mean the White House wants to delist Chinese companies? And we saw 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, 7% pullbacks in Chinese companies off of one Newswire report. Well, that got corrected over the weekend, and sure enough, the market this morning is correcting itself to a degree on those assertions. And what did that all do? Well, it didn't do anything. Breathe. The headlines are a very headline-driven decision-making is, I think, a great way to potentially lose a lot of money. And you gotta be careful. Turn off the notifications on your phone. Watch the cable news media less. I whatever you've got to do to help you not hyperventilate in those situations. There's a lot of them, and they're driven into us all the time. Point number two. Diversification is good. It is good not to have all your money in a single company. Diversification can be overdone. Picking, and I've seen this, I've seen professional managers put in 15 different mutual funds, 20 different mutual funds into a portfolio. Well, I'll tell you, I'm a pretty smart cookie, but there's no way I can tell you what the strategy is of a 20 mutual fund investment portfolio. Doesn't make any sense at all. Because any individual decision you've made at that point is lost. At which point you should just be looking at index funds. Very, very low cost index funds. And saving yourself management and time. Because frankly, if you are picking that many different minds making independent decisions about what your money is invested in, I would expect your performance to be no better than average, and after fees, probably subpar. That said, I'm a big fan of active management ultimately. I think there's a lot of value to be had in having good minds that drive consistent value-driven performance into portfolio building. But you've got to give space for those decisions to actually matter. So if that's the route you go, great. Your mutual funds by definition are already well diversified typically. Like they typically have at least 30 or 40 funds. Many of them have several hundred, which means your hands in a lot of the pot as it is in a lot of different ways. You don't have single stock exposure if you're in even one mutual fund. Let alone if you were to balance three or four across different asset classes or sectors and just sit on them on a consistent basis with good management. Diversification is good, but be smart about it. If you're over-diversified or if you've taken on more or, frankly, less risk than you should, and I'm seeing more people come to me with portfolios that have less risk than they should relative to their age and risk tolerance and performance. So these are things, again, get it in front of a financial planner. Get an opinion about what's going on in your retirement stuff. Are you diversified properly? Are you over-diversified? Are you correctly positioned with respect to risk? Do you have too much risk? Or, more often, do you have too little risk relative to your goals? Point number three. Make sure, if you're concerned about, well, even if you're not concerned, but frankly, if you're concerned about anything, make sure you have a strong emergency cash fund in case multiple bad things happen. If we're worried about a recession and a pullback and that type of thing, if that bugs you, fine. But if you don't have the cash to handle what other things can happen during that period of time, then you're either not that worried or you're not prepared. And it's probably more likely the latter. Because the thing is, when recessions occur, it isn't just that the market goes down. It's that you may have other things like job losses, reorganizations and restructurings, cuts and layoffs, unemployment increasing, a little more challenging to find work, all happening at the same time. And then something goes wrong in your apartment or your house. Your car breaks down. Kids get sick. You break your arm. I mean, there are so many bad things that can happen that we don't predict. We don't know. You go, well, that sounds like you should have a strong emergency fund all the time. Yes. But I'm using this topic as a point of leverage. If you are concerned at all about the market, I'm going to ask you, how strong is your emergency fund? Your emergency fund, the other thing about it is your emergency fund and how strong it is gives you permission to take on risk when it comes to your investing. Because the problem is if you put money into investments that you cannot in fact afford to lose, and then the market goes down and these these bad events happen, what are you having to do? Well, you're having to pull that money out. You're having to do it at the low point in the market. You're having to, make a very suboptimal choice on the basis that you weren't financially prepared. There are taxes, potentially penalties and fees, all bad time, all a way of you losing at least a chunk of what you've earned and what you've worked toward. It's where, quite frankly, a lot of people lost a lot of money in the recession was not having enough savings, being very heavy in terms of risk, maybe because they started late with retiring, and when the recession hit, having to cash out some or most of their 401k for living expenses. Some or most of their IRAs for living expenses. And we could talk in a completely different topic about how wrong that is and how to potentially navigate that a bit differently, but I digress. That was a bad time for everybody. And it didn't have to be that way, but you have to have cash on hand because shares of Apple do not pay the mortgage. Shares of Microsoft in and of themselves do not pay the car payment. Cash does. And they're going to want that mortgage or car payment, even in a bad market. Have a strong cash emergency fund. It allows you, gives you permission to take on the appropriate level of risk in your investing, and gives you the greatest chances of not having to tap into any of that, even if bad things happen to you. And even if there's a market pullback and bad things happen to you. And number four, consistent investing. I get asked periodically, well, you know, should we wait for a market pullback? Remember, go back to point number one. How good is my crystal ball? As good as everyone else's, as good as a rock in the garden. But one thing I can say is that, assuming that over a long period of time, we expect our assets and what we buy to be worth more, and that our investments to be worth more in the future than in the past. If we assume that one thing, if you're to invest a consistent amount each month, and we go ahead and we put that into the market and put that to work, what's going to happen is that when the market is higher, you'll buy less shares as a result. When the market is lower, that same amount going in each month is going to buy more shares of whatever it is that you were going to invest in anyway. This is what is referred to as dollar cost averaging. You are putting in the same amount of money periodically each month, just like paying a bill, except you're paying yourself in this case. And you're buying these stocks or mutual funds or whatever investment vehicle, bonds, what have you. But you're putting in this money consistently into this investment strategy. And when the market is higher, you're buying, you know, you're getting less shares of that item. When the market is lower, you're getting more shares. What happens is over time, your average price will be lower than the overall average price of those investments over that entire period of time. Because you're buying less shares when the market is higher and buying more when the market is lower, you are buying low more in terms of quantity, and so your average price will be lower over that period of time. That's additional return for you. On top of course, whatever growth you get from that investment over that period of time. So I'm a huge proponent when you think about it from that standpoint of consistent investing and treating it just like paying a bill. It's not something you do whenever you have a spare few extra dollars. It's something you plan to have some money allocated to on a monthly basis. It's a lifestyle choice. I think people have forgotten that idea overall. That investing isn't just something that you kind of do when you get rich. It is something that you do consistently, one, to become wealthy, and two, to maintain that wealth over a long period of time. For whatever it is you want that wealth to be able to do later on, it's developing and maintaining that habit as you're earning money of taking some of it and saying, and I'm putting this toward owning these businesses or owning these bonds or whatever it is, or some combination thereof, with the goal of this increasing my wealth and working for me as I continue to work for myself. And making that just as much a part of your monthly everything as the cable bill, as your phone. You need to think about this. Every 2, 3, 4 years, we're willing to put in $1,000 in a phone, or $1,200 or $700 or whatever in a phone. You think about that, what that $30 or $40 or $50 a month, done consistently for 30 years, that $15 a month it's something. That's not enough. I mean, that is not an insignificant amount of money. Well, what if that was $100 a month you're able to contribute, or $200 a month, or you're taking advantage of your match at work with your 401k? Or maybe you already are doing that, and you're going, well, what else can I do? I go, well, up it by a percentage point. You make just little adjustments like that repeatedly over time, and you're going to be surprised just how quickly you can actually build and grow and develop wealth. And that's a pretty exciting thing to look at and go, hey, I'm not living paycheck to paycheck. Hey, I'm actually building this thing for myself that I can rely on regardless what happens to me in the future. That's pretty sweet. But it doesn't happen by itself. So my hope is that with these 4 key tips, keep in mind that your crystal ball and my crystal ball work just as well, and that the headlines are not something to just go crazy over and jam on your, immediately jump on your, your financial advisor or brokerage account and just go nuts with. That diversification is good, but be smart about it, and that over-diversification can lead to leakage in returns. That you make sure you have a strong emergency fund in case multiple bad things happen, so that you are not having to dip into these retirement and qualified accounts and whatnot, and subjecting yourself to taxes and penalties and all the bad things on top of the bad things. And that you invest consistently and treat it just like your mortgage, your car payment, your phone bill, that future self gets a portion of your monthly personal or family budget. On that note, thank you so much for listening to this episode. Episode 50, the first episode of Season 2 of the Money is Personal podcast. Please, again, if there's anything you can do, share this podcast with your friends. Let them know it's here. Let them know it's a terrific resource. Again, you can find it on the Briggs Financial website at BriggsWealth.com, as well as iTunes, Google Play, Player FM. And please, by all means, write a review on iTunes, subscribe it to it weekly, and I very much appreciate your support and your listenership, and hopefully this has been a great episode for you. And finally, if there's something you want to learn more about, or you have any questions that you want to talk personally and have a free consultation, email me, Stephen@BriggsWealth.com, and I'll be happy to set that up for you. My name is Stephen Briggs. I'm the owner of Briggs Financial. Thanks for listening. Have a wonderful week, and I'll catch you with a fresh episode next week, Monday. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, Briggs Financial podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas, and check out the firm's website at www.briggswealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. Briggs Financial does not give tax, legal, or accounting advice. This information is not meant as financial or investment advice pertaining to your financial situation. Selection of appropriate investment or planning options and or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.